Good morning, would you please stand?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Would you please remain standing for a second? For a moment of silence for employing Rochelle Evans. Thank you. This morning we have a presentation, Jan Biss and Kim Vaya. This is on the Foster Care Awareness Month in Stanislaus County. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Mayfield, members of the board. My name is Jan Biss, and I'm an assistant director with the Community Services Agency, Child and Family Services Division. And with me today is Kim Vaya. She's an interviewer for the Independent Living Program for Foster Youth at the Community Services Agency. We are here today to recognize March as Foster Care Awareness Month and May 15 as Foster Parent and Relative Care Provider Appreciation Day in Stanislaus County. 100 years from now, it will not matter what my bank account was, the sort of house I lived in, or the kind of car I drove, but the world may be different because I was important in the life of a child. That's a quote from Forrest Woodcraft. In Stanislaus County, there are approximately 534 children placed in foster care. Of those children and youth, 492 are under the supervision of the Community Services Agency, and 42 youth are under the supervision of juvenile probation. Within the Community Services Agency, we have the ability to license foster families. We have 109 foster homes licensed who are playing a vital role in serving children in this community. We are continually recruiting and training new families, as often our foster parents become adoptive parents. Last year, we completed 78 adoptions. These foster parents in the Stanislaus County Foster Parent Association are currently providing care and support to 87 children who, for a variety of reasons, cannot be with their parents. Foster family agencies are licensed by the state of California, and they provide care for approximately 137 Stanislaus County children. Foster family agencies are not-for-profit, community-based organizations. An example would be Sierra Vista Child and Family Services, who is certified to care for foster children. Approximately 244 children live with relatives, extended family members, and legal guardians. The priority for the Community Services Agency is to place children and youth with relatives, if at all possible. Relatives complete a screening and approval process similar to licensed foster parents. Group homes serve an additional 24 children. Our foster parents and relative caregivers provide a very important role in the life of a child. They don't receive much attention and quietly go about providing a sense of security and safety to some of the most vulnerable members in our community, children and youth in out-of-home care. For these children and youth, it is the foster parent or relative caregiver that has the most impact on their daily life and provide the love and nurturing that they need. Research indicates that what children need most is a stable, permanent home and relationships. The success of a young child's life and future depends greatly that child has a committed, caring adult who provides that child with a permanent, stable relationship. It is due to their commitment and work that we are improving the lives of our children and making a contribution to the board's priority of safe and healthy communities.
Good morning. Voices of foster youth. Children currently in care. This is just some quotes that we've got from our youth. So here goes one. I was lost until the road led me to Shonda, my foster mother. She saved my life, and she is my mom. The insight from a foster youth is basically, I'm going to read something about me and my experience in foster care. My name is Kimberly Villa, as you guys know. I am a former foster youth. I cannot remember a time when I was not in foster care. Some of you may have fond memories of your childhood. I don't. As a child, I don't even remember being held by my birth parents. This may be because they were never really a part of my life. I never met them, and they never told me, they were never there to tell me, yay, you did a good job, great, you did it, none of that. I was very angry as a young child in foster care. I was withdrawn, and when someone offered me affection, I felt like they were trying to take advantage of me. I simply pushed people away. I felt this way for the first 14 years of my life. I had a huge sense of emptiness. Many people ask, why don't foster youth take advantage of the abundance of opportunities in foster care? I can tell you it is because all we think about is surviving, surviving today. We're never thinking about what will be tomorrow. My life changed when I was 14 years old, sitting in the Santa Clara County Children's Shelter, also like a little mini juvenile hall, waiting yet another foster care placement. I got the phone call from my social worker when he told me he had a problem seeing placement in Santa Claus County. It was a middle-aged, single white woman with no biological children. I was tired of living in a shelter, so I agreed to go. I remember this woman, and she, as soon as I came into her home, she gave me a hug. It was uncomfortable for me. I thought to myself, great, what is this woman going to teach me? What is she going to have in common with me? How is she going to help me? How is she going to understand what I'm going through in my life at this time? Little did I know, this woman, who had nothing in common with me, would change my life forever. She gave me structure and direction. She encouraged me to focus on school. Before, I had attended continuation when I moved to her house. After, she encouraged me to attend regular school and graduate on stage at Ceres High School to receive my diploma. Graduating with my class is one of my biggest accomplishments. My foster mother would give me a high five when I would do a good job. I love the positive encouragement. Eventually, I would let her put her arm around me when I did a good job. I moved out of my foster mother's home the day after graduating high school, and I started my own family. My foster mother continued to give me encouragement and direction. She encouraged me to attend parenting classes when my son was born. I immediately was impressed with my new creation. I didn't realize it then, but my foster mother had enabled me to feel comfortable, to be affectionate with my child, and to be a good mother. I soon had to go back to work and left my new baby in my foster mother's hands. Till this day, my foster mother continues to be my mom and my children's mama. I stand here as a former foster youth and a young mother of three who has strived to be where I am today, working full-time and attending college to earn my bachelor's degree in human services. So I would like to give my appreciation to a special individual who is not just a family member or friend. She is a person who I thought would stop caring about me after the foster care check stopped, but she didn't. Her name is Paula, and she is a very important person in mine and my children's life. Thanks.
Thank you, Kim. Is she here?
Go ahead. No, she's not. She's babysitting.
Okay. All right.
Okay. It was either me or her. Better yet.
Don't you usually bring the foster parents today here?
There are some in the audience.
Why don't you stand up so we can give you a hand? Do you have some more?
Just two more stuff. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay.
Being a foster parent, relative caregiver, is surely one of the hardest jobs in the world. We want to recognize them for all they do. We would like to give special appreciation to all the foster parents who have taken time to care for vulnerable children. I had several foster care placements, but it only took one foster parent to change me and believe in me. Good. Thank you to all the foster parents and caregivers who are foster parents and caregivers. You are the unsung heroes who make a difference in the life of a child. Thank you. We would like to give a special thanks to Velma Moore, president of the Santa Cruz County Foster Parent Association, and now she will receive a proclamation.
Thank you. I think you've been up here before, haven't you?
Oh yeah, we're getting there. But on behalf of the board and myself, this is a resolution for foster parents and stuff, and I'd like to present it to you. And I'd like to give you this microphone if you'd like to say a few words. You're not going to say anything? Oh, come on.
If you insist.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'd like to thank the Board of Supervisors and the Community Service Agency for giving me this proclamation. It's wonderful to stay in the same county the number of years we've been here and to get to receive this. And we are really working diligently hard to have a collaboration between the foster parents and the Board of Supervisors and the agency. We continue to come. You see, I continue to come back. So it must be pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
I'd like to thank you all.
Thank you. The second presentation we have this morning is a presentation on the Airport Advisory Committee annual report for 207. John? Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mr. Supervisor, fellow board members. My name is John Rogers, and I'm the committee chair for the airport board. And I'd like to introduce you to my new boss, Jerome Dale. Dale?
Brandon.
He's here for the first time, so we're going to kind of mutt and jet this.
Okay, that's
fine. If I don't do anything right, he'll fill in for me.
Okay.
First of all, I want to go ahead and tell you that the bad news is we had an airplane crash this weekend for Airport Appreciation Week. The good news, again, is we had over 3,000 participants. Of course, the bad news is we did have a major accident. Fortunately, Rob Harrison, as we speak, is doing very well. So we thank the good Lord for that. Some statistics on what we did last year. There was over 77,000 annual aircraft operations. We have over 200 aircraft based in Modesto, and that's the good news for you because it brings a lot of revenue into the county. The highest level ever of passenger enplanement and deplanement. And the numbers are 52,000 for 207, and it's up about 40,000 from 206. And we hope that with a little bit of luck and a few prayers that we will still maintain the Los Angeles shuttle. And I don't know how good that is, but we're anxiously awaiting some positive feedback on that. Total operating budget is over $800,000. And most of that is acquired. We have county revenues that we gave to you for $180,000 and $180,431, representing the county's one-third portion. And it's earmarked for general improvements, however, most of it is going to go into new hangars. And we have bids going out this summer, and hopefully by the time I or someone else stands up here and gives you a report for 208, that we'll have new hangars built. Recent accomplishments, we have extended our airport parking lot between the tower and the terminal, and it's used because we have so many more people in and out of the airport. General aviation airfield improvements, we installed slot drains to improve drains near the T-hangers, resurfaced pavement, and installed new airfield directional signals. All this to enhance safety at the airport. As a committee chairman, I feel privileged to be chairman of the board, chairman of the committee, but we are very active. We have a substantially active report for 07, and already this year we are well on our way of increasing that activity. There's a lot of participation at the airport. There's a lot of positive feedback, and we hope that with your support, we continue to do that. And I'd like to comment on the fact that Jim and Dick are very active as your representatives there, and it's appreciated. It just makes us work just a little bit harder. So I thank you both for that. Would you like to add anything?
Good morning. I appreciate Chairman Rogers' support on the Airport Advisory Committee. I enjoy working here as your new airport manager and look forward to the challenges ahead. I believe there's a very bright future for the Modesto City County Airport. I see a lot of potential with the facility and look forward to working with all of you in the future.
Thank you. Do you have any questions, sir?
Any questions from the board? If not, John, thank you, and good luck to you. And thank Jim and Dick for their participation on your committee.
Yes, yes.
Would you like to say something?
Yes, I'd like to commend the board for the improvement and expanding of the parking lot and also the safety features which you're constantly working on, and the progress that you've been making on the new hangars. And many people go up and down Mitchell Road, and they don't recognize some of the things you can't see, but I want to commend the board for your efforts, and thank you for your service.
Jim, how about you, Jim? Would you like to?
Yeah, I've been on this board now for 3.5 years, so I've enjoyed it all. And this committee is a hard-working committee dedicated to improvements to the city-county airport. And also would like to thank the board for putting in our property tax contribution into the airport, the one-third that we get, which was not the case when I first began on the board. And this money will go into building new T-hangers, which we need. They also will generate rent money, and it's a great improvement for the airport. It's taken a little while to get them built, but as I find, construction projects are sometimes more complicated than we think. I know that this board is also working on plan to provide irrigation water to the landscaping through a well instead of buying more expensive city water, and that will probably be the next project. So the city-county airport is just getting better all the time, and I look forward to still serving on the committee. We got a good group to work with and have just the best of intentions for the airport. I really would hope that the flights to Los Angeles do continue, because I've used those before myself, and that's something that would be really critical for this area to provide the best service for the people of Stanislaus County.
Well, it sounds, John, like everybody's happy. So,
yeah. Sir, as long as you're happy.
You better leave, sir. Yeah. You better leave, John. Everybody's happy.
Hit and run.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have a Dr. William Covino. Did I say it right?
Yes.
No, good.
Good morning. I'm Bill Covino. I am the Provost and Chief Academic Officer of CSU Stanislaus, and I wanted to take this occasion, and I hope future occasions, to stop by occasionally and update you on the accomplishments and plans of a university. Those who represent other divisions of the university may want to address you on occasion as well, but I certainly wanted to highlight what is currently going on, especially with respect to our academic programs, and focus on 4 items very briefly. First of all, the university distinctions that we've gained and maintained recently. The achievements and the distinctions that our faculty are earning, and the achievements and initiatives in our six new colleges at CSU Stanislaus. And then last but not least, trying not to be too downbeat, our current struggles with the budget and the way that that is going to affect the university. I wanted to mention, first of all, though, as a follow-up to the foster care presentation, the wonderful foster care presentation that you had earlier, that the university has a Promise Scholars program that provides full financial aid and mentoring for foster youth that we would like to move through the university, get their degrees, and move on to successful careers. We're currently supporting 26 foster youth as students at CSU Stanislaus, and we're seeking federal funding, actually, to expand that program. So it's very important to us as well. Relative to the general distinctions that the university has gained recently and continues to boast about, we were recognized by the prestigious Princeton Review as among the top 10% of the universities in the country. This is really a stellar recognition and puts us next to only two other California State Universities in the Princeton Review. We've also been recognized by U.S. News and World Report as one of the top 15 public universities in the West, and we continue to maintain those distinctions and gain others. We're very proud of them. We're also proud that that we are one of a relatively small number of universities that have all of our programs accredited by regional, national, and international accrediting bodies. Our nursing program was recently accredited by the Commission on Collegiate Nursing Education for a 10-year period. This is the maximum period allowed, which speaks to the quality of that program. Our College of Business Administration is accredited by the Association to Advance Collegiate Schools of Business. Our College of Education accredited by the National Council for the Accreditation of Teacher Education, and our arts programs are all accredited as well. Our programs in music and theater and in art are all accredited nationally. This is once again quite a distinction. It takes a good deal of work and attainments of great quality and dedication to earn this sort of accreditation. So we're very pleased with that. We've applied for reaccreditation for the university at large from the Western Association of Schools and Colleges, and we'll have an accreditation visit next October, which we're sure will go very, very well. Our faculty has contributed largely to the distinction of our academic programs in the three areas that the faculty work in, that is teaching, service, and research. On the teaching side, we have gained national recognition once again. We are among only a dozen universities in the country that were recognized by the American Association of State Colleges and Universities for efforts to ensure student success. 80% of our students persist from the freshman year to the sophomore year. While other universities are losing students are staying. They come to CSU Stanislaus, they stay, and they succeed. This is largely due to the context we provide and the wonderful efforts of the faculty to provide high-quality, encouraging, inspiring instruction and mentoring. Relative to the service that the faculty provide, especially community service, we have just been named to the President's Higher Education Community Service Honor Roll by the Corporation for National and Community Service. And this is largely a recognition of our service learning activities, of the extent to which we have students involved in internships, community service, a whole range of service activities throughout the county that the university supports and that benefit the students. So we've been recognized nationally for that. Relative to faculty research, and this is largely research that contributes to their success in the classroom and research that contributes to the enhancement of the region and certainly contributes to national discussions and national issues. Over the last year, the faculty's has published 20 scholarly books. They have published 100 book chapters and scholarly articles. They've given scholarly papers at over 250 conferences regionally, nationally, and internationally. And they've presented over 130 artistic performances and exhibits regionally, nationally, and internationally. In other words, we have a very distinguished faculty that is doing great things for the students, for their disciplines, for the region generally. We recently reorganized into 6 colleges. This is just the second year of that reorganization. And our colleges are earning their own distinctions as they move forward. Our new College of the Art, which includes the departments of art and theater and music, is expanding its design program in order to create programs, discuss the creation of programs in international design. This is an especially high-demand area for students, one that is very promising for career success that we want to make sure we provide. Our new dean, Daryl Moore, is an international designer and has gained a reputation everywhere in the world. We have a new Master of Fine Arts program in theater, and we are collaborating with the Townsend Opera, with the Gallo Center, and with other arts organizations throughout the region in order to create partnerships that I think will continue to build an arts presence in the county and more locally as well. Our College of Business Administration is continuing to expand its executive MBA program. This has been a wonderfully successful enterprise with a new cohort planned for Modesto over the next year, a cohort starting in Turlock this summer. We're also continuing our master's program in international finance with Cergy University in France. And this international connection, along with the international connections that we are building for instance, Monterrey, Mexico, are having the effect of expanding our business program and providing opportunities for our students and also creating exchanges that enrich the region generally. Our College of Education will begin the university's first doctoral program, the EDD in Instructional Leadership, this next fall. So we are just about ready to start that program. We've begun accepting student applications, and this is the first step to moving CSU Stanislaus into doctoral education. We're very, very excited about it, and the students and others who are involved are excited about it as well. Our College of Human and Health Sciences has developed a master's program in nursing, an MS in nursing, to complement its undergraduate program in nursing. This is, as you know, a crucial area for us to continue to develop resources and degree programs in, and we're happy to be able to continue to serve that need. The California State University system generally is now beginning to explore offering a doctoral degree in nursing, which we will be looking toward in the future. That College of Human and Health Sciences is also developing a new degree in health sciences, an omnibus degree that should provide training in health sciences and an undergraduate degree in health sciences in a whole range of areas that will be important career areas for our students. And also we have ongoing discussions with UC Merced about the ways in which we can support their medical school initiative and be involved in the expansion of health sciences initiatives with them. Our College of Humanities and Social Sciences, which is our largest college, is going to roll out a new degree completion program in criminal justice next fall. This is primarily for law enforcement officers who would like to complete a college degree. We've been working with the Modesto Police Department and other law enforcement agencies on this. That our criminal justice program, which is a really wonderful, distinguished, exciting program, is developing a new concentration in juvenile justice, which is the only one in the California State University system, and I think will contribute to addressing many of the challenges related to juvenile justice that we face in this region and elsewhere. And finally, our College of Natural Sciences has developed a new master's program in genetic counseling, which will begin this fall. This is a cutting-edge degree and one that we think will benefit a great number of students and certainly serve a growing need. And our master's program in ecology and sustainability, which is a very new one, is up and running and gaining distinction and really helping us to pursue, as part of our mission, the development of green technologies and the development of sustainable technologies and sustainable initiatives. We have, relative to our sciences progress, just been accepted as a new member of the Californian Cooperative Ecosystem Studies Unit, which is part of a national network of federal agencies and partnering institutions that work on ecosystem and resource management issues. All that taken together is very exciting for me and for many of us, but as you know, we are suffering some budget woes. We are expecting the governors may revise tomorrow. In the meantime, the CSU is anticipating a cut to next year's budget of over $300 million. And as we at CSU Stanislaus look toward that possibility, the academic side of the house has canceled searches for 22 new faculty positions. We'll be hiring a few faculty, but not nearly as many as we need. And we have reduced our course offerings for next year, which will reduce access by as many as 1,700 seats for students as compared to this year. So there is going to be some stress, and there is going to be some pain relative to the budget situation, which is particularly unfortunate at a time when the economic situation leads more students to the university, more students to new career paths, and we want to be able to meet that need and hope that there'll be some improvement that will help us to do so. Thank you very much for giving me some time. I'm happy to answer any questions, and certainly we'll look forward to coming back again.
Is there any questions of Dr. Correa? If not, I think we feeling the same thing you're feeling with the budget, and we're feeling a little bit of stress. So I think that stress is going to be around for a while.
Yes.
Okay. But good luck to you. Thank you for the report.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we have the public comment period. We have one person wants to speak on B8. First, let's go to on the consent calendar. What's B8 anyhow?
That's the non-consent item. That's our non-consent.
Oh, that's okay. We can talk then. You want to pull B5 on the consent calendar?
Yes, and if you'll refer that back to me, please.
Okay. We'll pull B5, and I need a motion to move on the consent calendar.
So move. Second, then.
Moved by Grover and second by DeMartini. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried 5-0. And on B5, you're going to take care of that, Ray?
Yes.
Okay. So we don't need to vote on that at all then?
No.
Okay. With that, we go down to, I believe that's B8, isn't it? B8. Approval of a 2-year pilot program for the mental health care for the eligible, the Indigent Health Services Agency, Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. Marianne and Denise Hunt. You're already there.
Ready.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Marianne Lee from the Health Services Agency, and welcoming back Denise Hunt, the Director of the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, with me this morning. I also want to, before I get started, I want to introduce some others in the audience that have been definitely a part of what we're about to propose to you. Patrice Dietrich here, your interim director at the Community Services Agency, and Madeline Schlepfer from the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services, and then our two doctors, Dr. McCurgy is the medical director from BHRS, and Dr. Del Morris, who's the medical director for the Health Services Agency. We're before you this morning to deliver a proposal to you on mental health care for eligible indigents. And I'm going to run through the presentation, but I assure you this is really a collaborative effort of really our three agencies, BHRS, CSA, and HSA. I want to start by giving some background as to why we're here. This is really the result of a public hearing that was held on March 18th, where your board approved a recommendation made by HSA to eliminate the provision of care, including drugs, for the seriously mental ill on the MIA program. At that time, while the recommendation was approved, your board directed BHRS and HSA to work together in the next 60 days, and we're inside the 60 days, to come back to the board and give a proposed solution to the problem. I wanted to explain a little bit about why we're in the situation that we are. The HSA was providing mental health services, including psychotropic drugs, when there was not a mandate. And we certainly have had our budget issues and concerns, and we had been spending about $300,000 on an annual basis. That figure is based on our fiscal year 06-07 experience, and in that year there were 157 patients that had received the psychotropic drugs. But this isn't all about a situation of an expenditure without a mandate. There was also a scope of practice issue that HSA really felt needed to be addressed because of the shortage of access for psychiatry services. Our primary care physicians, our family medicine doctors, really felt that by default they were being looked upon by the community to act as if they were psychiatrists, which is an area that they are not specialized in, that they don't have that training. So we needed to address that. So based on that meeting and your directive, we put together an informal work group. We've met many times. And what's before you is really what we set out to do. We wanted to do a more in-depth review of the patients to more clearly define the scope of illness, which really told us what is the problem that we were really trying to solve. We wanted to consider the essential elements to a pilot program. If we were going to propose a program, what do we think it really needed to contain? Consider the challenges and opportunities that were before us. We didn't want to just look at the service needs, but also explore where there might be means of recouping some of our costs, and then ultimately develop a proposed pilot program and put together financial projections for you. So I want to start by talking about the review. BHRS was really instrumental in this process of looking at the patients, looking at the population, the indigents, qualified indigents that we were talking about. And not surprisingly, BHRS knew many of these patients, not all of them, so we did have to make some assumptions. But they knew many of the, about three-quarters of the patients that we were talking about. And in reviewing the information that was available to them, they found that although those patients had been on psychotropic drugs when they came to HSA, that their information led us to believe that there were really some categories of scope of illness, and they weren't all seriously mentally ill. You can see about 20% we think are seriously mentally ill. About 36% are co-occurring, meaning that they have both a mental health condition as well as an alcohol and or drug abuse problem. And then about a quarter of them we think are mainly alcohol or drug abuse, for which the psychotropic drugs really are ineffective. And then about 20% that we believe really have more of a mild to moderate condition that the primary care physicians are in a position to go ahead and take care of. So that helped us really define what we needed to do. In terms of the essential components, we know that for patients that are seriously mentally ill, that many of them, we believe, we could qualify for Social Security and Medi-Cal so that we could have an outside payer if we put the components together to help get those patients onto Medi-Cal. So we knew that if we were going to put a program together, it wasn't going to be just about having psychiatry access. We really wanted to have an advocacy component to help patients get to get on to a different benefit program that allows the county to have a different payer and more service for the patient. We knew that we needed a gatekeeper model, and Supervisor Grover mentioned that at the March meeting, and we really see that for a couple of reasons. Now that we've learned that there are really categories of what the patients need, we need the ability to do that assessment to know what they really need, and then also a gatekeeper model to assure that we're only sending the most appropriate patients to a very limited access point for psychiatry. And, you know, and from working together, we knew that we really needed an integrated system that drew on the strengths of our three agencies, of CSA, BHRS, and HSA. So now I'm going to describe what the two-year pilot program is, and we're proposing this as a two-year, and as I go through the presentation, I'll explain why we're asking for it to be a two-year program. First, there are two mechanisms for that gatekeeper approach. One would be a licensed clinical social worker within HSA, where the primary care physician would refer the patient to that allied professional to do the first level screening. And we'd use a tool that BHRS would provide that would help us to determine what the patient needed. Then at BHRS, there would be an assessment level, also an allied professional, not a psychiatrist, that would do more of an in-depth assessment. In some cases, this would be another face-to-face encounter with a patient. In some cases, it could just be consultation back with the allied professional at HSA. And then part of the program would obviously have a psychiatric component, mainly for consultation, in some cases maybe limited treatment. And in terms of the program, this is going to be one of the more challenging areas because psychiatric access is not easy to come by. We may need to explore an option of telemedicine as a way to access out of the area psychiatry in order to create the kind of capacity that we need. The medications would continue to be dispensed by the HSA pharmacy. We would, as we've been doing, we would be seeking free drugs through the manufacturer programs whenever possible. For those drugs that we would need to purchase, we would be able to access the 340B federal discounts, and I mention that because this is, you know, what we're proposing is just for the MIA population, and for those that would be, they would be patients of our primary care physicians in the FQ designated clinics, which gives us access to that 340B discounted purchasing. The advocacy component would mainly be as a part of the BHRS services. And that would include assisting the patients with that application process, coordinating getting the disability evaluation from the psychiatrist, which is absolutely essential to be successful at getting approved for Medi-Cal. And then we would explore the possibility of having trained volunteer peer support within the HSA clinics. That's been shown to help patients maybe be less reliant on medications in order to be more functional. What I've described so far is really on the service side and the cost side. I wanted to mention a little bit about what we have found in terms of a means to recover some of our expenses. And this is where CSA was wonderful coming to the table, is that they have federal state matching funds that could help recover some of, not all, but some of the costs associated with the advocacy effort, which would be part of that application assistance. The consultative, not treatment, but the consultative services on the part of a psychiatrist. So that's partial expense recovery. And then because some of these patients will qualify for Medi-Cal, once Medi-Cal becomes the payer, in most cases it'll be retroactive. So we have the means to go back and bill Medi-Cal for the services rendered. And the nice thing about this is that it's not just limited to what we're talking about here in the mental health pilot program, but if we have a medically indigent adult who becomes Medi-Cal, then HSA, the MIA program, can also go back and seek reimbursement from Medi-Cal to recover some of those county funds. This is really where the 2 years comes into play, because the Medi-Cal application process can take a long time. We've put 6 to 18 months as an assumption in this pilot. I have just heard of a case that took 3 months, but I've also heard of a case that took 24 months. So I think 6 to 18 is sort of a reasonable assumption. But if we do this pilot for just a year, we really aren't going to be able to really show whether or not it was effective because of this long, this is something out of our control in terms of the length of time it takes to get through that application process. So that's really the reason that we're asking for this to be a two-year pilot. I want to show you the financial projections, talk a little bit about what's before you there. In the first year, we are estimating that this pilot program, that the county cost would be between $200,000 and $270,000. And the main difference between those figures has to do with how we secure enough access to psychiatry. If we need to develop a telemedicine capability, there's an expense there, there's equipment, and we may need to pay for more treatment. So that's really the difference between those figures. Where you see the annual revenues, what we included in there is recouping some of the expense through CSA's ability on the advocacy, the outreach advocacy, the consultation piece. We didn't include any of the Medi-Cal, potential Medi-Cal reimbursement in year one to be conservative. So then in year two, you see the cost do go down. We're estimating $140,000 to about $170,000. And you know, the two main differences there is that if we purchased the telemedicine equipment, software line capability and whatnot, that was a one-year, the first year expense. We wouldn't have that again in the second year. And we've included some of the Medi-Cal payer reimbursement for services in that second year. Just to share a little bit more about those financial projections, in terms of our work group, we're proposing that BHRS and FSA do this at least on a reconciled basis as a 50-50 cost sharing for this program. It's really going to take our collective work on an ongoing basis to make this effective. Again, we're proposing it as a two-year pilot because of the Medi-Cal eligibility piece. The psychiatric capacity, that's really going to be one of the biggest challenges in this pilot in order to develop enough psychiatric access. And if we need to, we'll explore a telemedicine option. Supervisor DiMartini hooked me up recently with a woman from UC Merced as they're trying to develop a telemedicine service. And there may be some grant dollars. I haven't gone far enough to be able to explore that, but there possibly could be some grant dollars available to help with the expense of that setup. And then I wanted to mention the potential for county costs if we don't do this. And I know there was a lot of discussion about that at the March meeting. And in terms of our work group, we would agree that there probably would be some county costs if we did a, you know, no treatment option. But we really couldn't find a way to give you a meaningful estimate of what that would be. You know, there could be some incarceration costs if there was no treatment. There could be an increase in inpatient services for indigents, but we're really unable to measure that effectively. I want to talk a little bit about the opportunities and challenges. Opportunities first. If we move forward with this pilot program, I believe it would really fill a community need with appropriate services. We'd certainly be leveraging resources across three county departments. It's projected to be a lesser cost than what the county has currently been incurring with HSA's cost on the psychotropic drugs. On the challenges piece, and I really can't emphasize this enough, we do believe that the toughest piece of this pilot is going to be to be able to secure and maintain access to psychiatry. The challenge, the county might save less than the no pilot option, but again, we have a difficult time trying to measure what that would be. The next one is really the potential for an unintended consequence of putting this pilot together. By developing a new program, it's a new means of accessing a hard-to-access service. We could find that more folks are seeking enrollment into the MIA program, and if that were to occur, we could have additional utilization. We've not included that in our projection, so if if we end up with more individuals, we may the projections may be underestimated. And then finally, and this is kind of a common theme, this is just one of many statewide problems where we've got diminishing resources and increasing community need. That really describes what the pilot program is that we're proposing. As a matter of process, I think it's important for you to know that we went through this pilot proposal with the Health Executive Committee last week, and the committee was supportive. I understand that BHRS also presented the proposal to the Mental Health Board, and the board is also supportive of this pilot program. So with that, our recommendations before you this morning, we ask that you approve the two-year pilot program for eligible indigents, that you authorize the operational activities necessary across our three agencies to implement the pilot. And then from HSA, we're asking that you authorize the incremental implementation of the decision that you made on March 18th so that we can coordinate the implementation of that decision with the implementation of the pilot to try to make the most smooth transition for the patients that are involved. And with that, I'll stop, and we're all available to answer any questions.
Well, I'm sure there'll be some. Jim, you want to go first?
Okay. It looks like you have this pretty well thought out. I'm satisfied with this because I realized that there wasn't any mandate, you know, to provide services for the mentally ill that are indigent, but what you gave us a month ago or so was no solution to the problem at all. And I really have some high hopes for this telemedicine that you brought up, because our healthcare task force on the west side has talked to UC Merced, and I think this may be the way of the future, not just for mental health, but for other specialty services. And then on the west side, you know, we can't really afford to bring in doctors that have specialty services, but with telemedicine, it's possible. It's a new field that really has a future. So I'm glad you're looking into that. I believe that the county does have responsibility to the people that are mentally ill and they're indigent, and just cutting off services, you know, that was proposed last time just wasn't going to fit the bill. And I'm glad you've looked at, you know, the matching funds and or at least talking to Behavioral Health and the Community Services Agency to work as a collaboration between the three agencies to try and accomplish something for these people. The cost impact to the county was also a concern of mine, besides what our responsibility was. And when you look at, you know, if the services were cut off for these people, the hospital care at the mental health hospital, you know, could be high. Incarceration at the jails was also another cost that we might incur. But also to the impact of these people and their families was also a concern too. So I really like what you've come up with. You know, I'm in full support of it. And I really have that high hopes for that telemedicine. This is charting new ground, but I think it has a great potential. So thank you.
Bill, would you like to say something?
Yeah, I just want to thank all three departments for coming to the table and working on a well-thought-out solution. The outcome with this proposal today is going to be much better than what we were faced with 60 days ago. So I want to thank everybody for coming to the table for this solution.
Dick, how about you?
Well, I, too, want to commend everyone who got together and resolved this. In this daunting challenge, you didn't throw your hands up and walk out. And I want to commend everyone in your depth of research and talking to individuals. And I believe this is a true example of what the departments in Stanislaus County can accomplish. And I want to commend you once again.
Jeff?
I'd like to thank Mrs. Chavez for meeting with Supervisor O'Brien and I and sharing some rather personal information that
helped us to understand a lot better the scope of a problem like this. And I think threw some ideas out that I see incorporated in here, the idea, and Marianne, you didn't get a chance to talk about it a whole lot, but a different way of accessing medicines at a much lower cost. I think that's something that is new to the program. And then maybe some help in getting these folks to Medi-Cal and how that could help everybody in the long run. One thing that concerned me when we first started talking about this at the committee level, and it's only been a week or two, but it seemed a little bit like it could be intimidating for some of these folks as we start talking about telemetry and being interviewed and that sort of thing. Maybe you could describe what you have in mind as how one of these interviews would go, so it's not as intimidating as it might sound.
I can talk a little bit about it, and others may want to share too. The Health Services Agency actually several years ago had a telemedicine service. It wasn't for psychiatry. We mainly used it for dermatology, and it was a program that was in partnership with Blue Cross. The equipment was owned by Blue Cross, so we don't have it any longer. And I know from that experience, initially it was intimidating, but you have a very trained presenting clinician. Often it's a nurse that because they're well trained in how to present the patient, that what seems like an intimidating situation is real workable.
So the nurse is in the room with the patient.
Absolutely.
And then there's someone on the other end.
Exactly.
Asking the questions.
Exactly. So I don't, in terms of telepsychiatry, we don't have any experience with that, but we know that telemedicine can work and it's very effective.
California that has started using the telepsychiatry option because of the shortage of trained psychiatrists able to work in the community setting. So it is something that is being used in other counties. And the reviews are pretty good. I shared the same concern that you did about somebody being hesitant to get services over a TV.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, patients are accepting of it, and it does work well.
Okay, great. Well, I want to thank you all for digging in a relatively short time and coming up with what I think is a good next step. Chairman, I see several folks, particularly Mr. Angel and some of the folks that may want to give us some of their opinion on it. I'd like to hear that.
I was just waiting until everybody finished up here, and I was going to give them all a chance.
Okay.
Robert, would you, Angel? I wasn't going to forget about you.
Thank you. Dear Supervisor Mayfield, in our letter to you of March 14th, 2008, the Mental Health Board voiced concerns with regards to the Health Service Agency, HSA, proposed enforcement of the benefits policies excluding coverage for the mental health and substance abuse treatment under the medically indigent adult MIA program. The Mental Health Board members, along with other community members, also expressed their concerns at the public hearing held March 18th. Following approval of the HSA recommendations with a 3-2 vote, the Board of Supervisors instructed staff from HSA and Behavioral Health and Recovery Services to develop a program options to serve individuals with serious mental illnesses who qualify for the MIA program and have no other access to mental health services. Staff were to present the program options to the Board of Supervisors within 60 days. Subsequent to this, the Mental Health Board requested that the recommendations be presented to them for input prior to the presentation to the Board of Supervisors. This occurred at a special meeting of the Mental Health Board held May 8th. Following the presentation of the recommendations and extensive discussions, the Mental Health Board voted unanimously to support the proposed recommendations. On behalf of the Mental Health Board, I would like to express our appreciation for the consideration you gave to our concerns and comments. We also appreciate your commitment to providing access to much-needed services for individuals with serious mental illnesses. Further, we want to commend staff of HSA, BHRS, and community service agencies for their thoughtful efforts with regards to this issue. Robert Angel, Chairperson, Mental Health Board.
Thank you, Robert. Is there anyone else out there who would like to speak to the board this morning?
Be-
Good morning. I'm Joyce Pliss. I'm the Secretary of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And I would like to thank BHRS for including family members in their decisions and when they're looking for options, because one of the things that was not addressed is the anguish of family members who have someone that they just can't get qualified for SSI or for Medicare, so that they can't find this, and they have no options for treatment. It's very agonizing to see a family member suffering and needing treatment and then just can't get services. And I have a letter that has been approved by our board members that I would like to read. The Stanislaus chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness would like to encourage the approval of the 2-year pilot program for mental health care for medically indigent adults that would be affected by proposed cuts by Health Services Agency. Our officers have attended meetings and discussed options and feel that people who have are diagnosed with severe mental illness should be treated by psychiatrists and not by physicians. We believe that providing assistance to fast-track qualifying them for SSI and Medicare would provide the best avenue to pay for treatment. A concern would be using volunteer peer support, that these people would need to be very well trained and be given the resources to be able to be effective to do that. On behalf of family members, we find it difficult to find effective treatment for our loved ones, and we hope that you will provide the necessary treatment for them so they're not just another casualty of the mental health cuts. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Chairman Mayfield.
Oh, you want to speak. Okay.
I just wanted to say one thing.
Okay.
I've been out of the office for several weeks, and I just wanted to commend Dr. Madeline Schletzer for her work in this on behalf of BHRS, because she really was the one working with Health Services and CSA and the CEO's office to make this happen. So I want to thank her publicly for that.
Okay. We gave you a challenge in 60-day period. You all came through, and you did what you did a great job. Okay? With that, now we got to do our job. I need a motion to approve the 2-year pilot program by the board. And who's going to do that?
Motion to approve.
Second it. Yeah, second that, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine. I'm only just put everybody second it, okay? Anyway, you got them all? Bill O'Brien made the motion. Dick Monty seconded it. DeMartini seconded it. And I'm on the committee with Jeff, and I'll second it. How about you, Jeff? You going to second it?
I'll fifth it.
You'll fifth it, okay. So everybody's made a motion and seconded it up here. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we go down to, it looks like, correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Clerk Recorder Election Division requesting the Board of Supervisors to designate a member of the board to participate in the Election Observer Panel for the Tuesday, June 3rd, 2008 election.
Okay, we need to designate a member of the Board of Supervisors to participate on the panel. And I personally will be so glad when the election's over and somebody's picked to take my seat at the end of December. They can't have it till the end of December, but at the end of December, they've got it.
Again, Supervisor, excuse me, Chairman, are you going to be in town that day?
I'm not going to do it.
My problem is I'm out of the country that day.
Okay.
These other three guys are on the ballot.
They're all on the ballot? No.
Oh, Dick's not. Okay. I'm sorry.
Who?
I was just thinking it would be appropriate if you would be there, because to make sure that somebody gets picked to replace you.
No, truthfully, I'm so sick of hearing about what I haven't done and what I have done in the last 16 years that I don't want to be on there. And I'm so sick of hearing on the radio about the backdoor meetings we've had. So let me tell everybody in the audience who's listening, there's nobody here now, I have never had a backdoor meeting with anybody. Any meeting I've ever had has always been well advertised, and everybody was welcome to come in and see it. But, you know, people tell me this is political talk. I don't buy political talk. I think it's a bunch of junk, to be honest with you, and I'm just about had it up to my, as far as I can go with this, and I know we shouldn't be talking about this and the board, But I'm disgusted that we listen to the radio and we talk about the backdoor meetings and all that kind of stuff. If there's anybody out there that thinks I've ever had a backdoor meeting, made a special deal, then you better come and talk to me, because I'm going to prove you wrong. And I'm even mad at Bethesda B. Can you believe that? Okay. When they write an article and they recommend somebody to vote for, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But leave me out of it. My name should never have been in that article. Okay. And I'm sick of hearing about what I haven't done, what I have done. If everything I've done and on the District 2, okay, I've got to get this off my chest. Okay. They have all the services that they have in Modesto that they didn't have 16 years ago. If you lived in Modesto, they have certain services. If you lived in Turlock, they've got everything that we've got over here. Okay? With that, okay, let's go to the next one. I had to get that off my chest. Okay? Because
are we going to appoint someone, or is that just a...
I haven't got to that yet. Okay. Who would like to do that? Bro, you're on the ballot. You're not, but you got no opponent. Okay, let's see. Dean Martini, you're on the ballot. You got an opponent, though. We can't put you there. You might corrupt that thing. Okay. Okay, let's get over here to Dick. Do you want to go down and look at it?
Let me ask you, when does it close? Because I have an appointment from 6 to 8. When does the election close?
Yeah, I don't know.
Elections close at 8, and usually it's 45 minutes or so until they have anything ready to speak.
I can do it then, but from 6 to 8, I made a commitment, but if it's after 8, then I can be there.
Well, thank you, Dick. I really didn't want to do it, but I'm sure glad you do. Okay.
I will represent you.
You will represent me?
Yeah.
I know I'm in good hands. Okay. Do we need a motion for that?
No.
Okay, here we go. Let's go on. Keep going, Christine.
This board has received a letter from the Oakdale Fire Protection District requesting dry period financing.
We're going to refer this to the auditor and the controller. That means they've run out of money, right? That's a dry period?
Yes.
Okay. Well, go on.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Okay. We acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Officer and the Risk Management Division. Is there any Board of Supervisors report, Jim?
Yes, I would like to say that the Ag Advisory Board has taken up the question of truck parking on in the A2 zone. I don't know what will become the outcome of it, but we have several small trucking outfits. Some of them have been there for many years, and they're actually operating illegally without a use permit and in a zone where it's not allowed. So the Ag Advisory Board has taken this up, as has the Farm Bureau, to see whether or not any changes in the zoning or would be recommended or not. Probably be about a month and a half before we have anything back on that.
Wasn't this taken up a few years ago? And didn't we have something that take care of the matter?
Not that I'm aware of.
Oh, yeah, Jim. Oh, yeah. You may not be aware, but years ago we had the same thing. But I don't know what's changed since then about the...
Well, we've had the code enforcement has been out responding to complaints and of trucking outfits. They're usually very small trucking outfits that have maybe 4 or 5 trucks, mm-hmm. and they're not operating with a use permit and in a zone where it's not permitted. So we're just taking a look at it to see if we want to make any changes. We may look at it and say that we don't want to make any changes.
Okay. Anybody else?
We are addressing it.
Anybody else over here? No reports? How about you, Jeff?
No.
Okay. Any legislative, fiscal, and management report by the Chief Executive Officer?
Yes, I would like to report that the Governor's May revised budget will be issued tomorrow, May 14th. We are, of course, very interested in those recommendations, as it will have a direct bearing on our ability to deliver services in our local community. Both the Senate and Assembly budget subcommittees have been meeting on an ongoing basis and are, in fact, starting earlier than they do traditionally. Significant news from the Senate Budget Committee, chaired by Mike Machado, kind of a sleight of hand, after recessing the meeting, quickly reconvened it and initiated $538 million in cuts from local law enforcement programs, affecting the COPS program, rural sheriff's grants, local detention facility subcommittees, the $21 million reduction from CalNet, and other local law enforcement programs. The action was, I think, at best unethical, and certainly did not speak to a high level of professionalism in the state legislature at this time. Additionally, county staff, Patty Hill Thomas, and I have been meeting with all of the cities who have expressed an interest in partnering with the county on our animal services programs, our shelter expansion and operations initiative that's currently ongoing. We are continuing those dialogues and receiving some positive feedback. The county staff, working with library staff, continues to develop and refine our recommendations relative to options to address the budget shortfall in our library system. We would expect to have a final recommendation before the full Board of Supervisors in the next several weeks. Actually, probably the week after next, the 20th or 27th, we're dark, so it would be the 20th.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay. We are adjourned.